Okay, so we're still talking with Mr. Charles Morris, and we're talking about Lux. This is the third part. We were just talking about how he had an hour lunch break, and because Lux was out there at West Main and Hartman, what we now know is West Main and Hartman were the Burger King and the BP gas station, I think it is now, the restaurants that were in the area that you could get to for your lunch break. You had the Lighthouse, which was pretty well known at the time. You had the Greenhouse Place. Green Hut, and then you went farther down, and Snow White Drive-In, which was probably built while you were in Korea, but then you came back in, and those were places you could probably get to. That was probably pressing it for your hour, though, wasn't it? By the time you got out to drive all the way down there and get yourself something and get back. So you go to the Lighthouse and have a roast beef sandwich. You said they made a good roast beef sandwich.
Oh, boy.
And then the Green Hut. What kind of food did the Green Hut have? Were they more like sit-down, like meet and three type place, or what?
Which one?
The Green Hut.
The Green Hut, yeah, was like burgers, and they had it all. But they would, you could get a meat and three or two, and.
Well, and then we were talking about how other factories. So Lebanon Woolen Mills was already in operation, obviously, because they go back, you know, well pre World War, probably in World War One. When did they start? Yeah. And then they made almost all the blankets for the U.S. troops in World War Two. They made a lot of them. And then you move forward in time, and then you have you guys, Lux, opening up. And then you had Texas Boot come in right before, I think you said.
Yeah, 52, I think.
And then where is now Texas Boot? That was, where was that at?
It's out 231 north, just past, two blocks past the county jail.
Coles Ferry comes in right around in there.
Oh, Coles Ferry comes right almost even with the back end of the jail, so it's on out
a little farther.
The next block, actually the next light down there.
Yep. And then you had the rail spur that comes off and crosses the bypass. You said there was a Texas axe handle company that was, or I'm sorry, I'm not Texas, Lebanon.
Hickory Handle, I almost said the guy's name. He had a German name, and he made axe handles, had about three or four, five saws running, and somebody working on each one of them, and each one of them was making handles. And
now, did they ever press any of the heads onto them there, or did they just make the handles and the handles only? Okay.
Hickory handled. Hickory was supposed to be the best for hammer handles, axe handles. It wasn't just axe handles. They made all kind of handles. And
so Hickory, do you know? I mean, I don't know if you know, but I know you were at the clock manufacturing for almost a third of a century. But with the axe handle business there, Lebanon is historically known as the Cedar City, and you mentioned earlier the cedar caskets that were getting made further on Maple Street. Hickory, the woods around here do have hickory in them, but not near, like,
there was plenty of hickory, though. There still is today.
So was a lot of that from the area that was being harvested here and then brought to them to be processed, or were they buying it off of Railsburg from
here? Yeah,
really?
Yeah, a guy with a little pickup truck or a flatbed on it or three-quarter ton or something, he'd go out in his woods on the farm and cut him some of these big logs, 6 feet long or different lengths that they would buy, and haul them down there, and they measure the end of them and tell them how much
I gotta find me one of those handles, because I never think of hickory from this area. I always think of cedar.
I almost said the guy's name again.
It'll pop up later. It'll pop up. You said it was a German name, German sounding name. Yeah, that's making them.
He's he'd hire people that had experience with saws and all, and one of my neighbors was 80 years old, and he was still working there. And he'd carry me out there on Saturday sometime, and they had just a tablet hanging up over each one of the saws on the beam up there, and he'd carry me to his, and he'd show me on his how many he saw Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and he'd mark them, you know, each day.
Mm. So he knew how many he was making, and
then wouldn't be nobody there. He just showing me on Saturday they wasn't working, and He's proud of it though, 80 years old. And he still had all of his fingers. And he'd show me these young whippersnappers tablets next to him up there. He'd have more.
That he was whooping those guys that were half his age?
He was sawing more logs than they were.
Nice.
Yeah. Middleton was his name.
Middleton?
Middleton. And
you said it's Chester Middleton?
No, I forgot.
Mr. Middleton.
He was 80 years old.
And still working and had all of his fingers and was proud of it,
Still had all of his fingers. And, they do this when they push that log through there on them old, the circular saws. Yeah. They put their fingers up there like that, pushing that log.
Yeah, so you're getting too close.
Through the saw. And I watched him do it, and he showed me how he could do it. And he gave me strawberry plants from his garden, and I brought them up here to my farm. And
here off Bell Road.
Yeah, here on Bell Road, 3 miles out, mm-hmm. Peacock Farm.
I'm one of these days. I'm gonna have you go show me that, because I've only got about 7.5 acres over in Bellwood, and I've got chickens and things. And I wanted to get some peacocks, but my wife wouldn't let me. She said they're too loud and she didn't want them out there.
Too what?
My wife said they're too loud and she wouldn't let me get them. She said she didn't want them running around making a bunch of noise and stuff. She feels the same way about guineas too. So,
A lot of people talk about that, but I don't ever hear them.
Yeah.
You get used to it. They don't holler as much as people give them credit for. Most time it's when they're excited about something and strangers comes up or something, and that's why she notices it, she comes around some and they're not used to her, then they holler. But most everyone, the sounds that they make are different for whatever is happening. They're giving signals is what it is.
So if you're around them enough and so if they make a certain call, you probably know what's going on, because
it may be a bobcat, and you look out yonder 500 feet at the road, and there stands a bobcat out there that's wanting to sneak in there and get him some supper or breakfast or dinner. And they're brave also. That one knows it. All of them got their head in there when that one makes that signal. They all, immediately they know what it is. They're all looking yonder.
Mm-hmm.
Then they start toward whatever that is.
To let them know that they've been had.
Not the other way, but they go toward him.
Yeah.
And they spread out. Way over there and way over here, and they keep going.
To flush it out or whatever the predator is that's over there.
And
they close in on that bobcat.
Most of the time, time they get halfway there, he'll turn around and head out of there. Bobcat or coyote or...
We've got, just here over by Bellwood, I was telling you, off Carthage Highway, we've lost chickens to bobcats. I've got on cameras. I have little cameras out around that, set off whenever something goes past them, and coyotes. And a few years back, I had two young juvenile mountain lions that I guess they, their mom was done raising them or whatever, but they're still kind of hanging out together. They'll do that for a little while. And for about a week, every day, they're picking a chicken off.
Yeah.
And I was out there, because they figured that was a pantry. They could just get the food. But I went to Edward's Feed, and they had this little thing that you put, and it's got a red light that blinks.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a little solar-powered thing with a red blinking light. But since I put that out, I'm not kidding, they left. They went on. Because they would almost always come up, and the first thing in the morning was still dark. And I go out there drinking my coffee and looking, and this young mountain lion snatched a chicken and went over a fence with the chicken in his mouth. Didn't even touch the fence, about a 4 or 5 foot jump high. And then I put that little blinking light right there on that thing, and I never saw him after that. So, I swear by those things, because it was such an easy fix, and whatever that is, they don't like that thing. What you got there? So you showed me a picture on your phone? I see it. Got a raccoon
about
there.
Picking your chickens off. He picked off two guineas for me.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few days ago.
Yep. Raccoons.
And I can get that light at Edwards.
Yep.
And And you think it...
would deter them?
Deters...
mountain lions and bobcats and stuff?
Yeah.
But it draws them in?
Well, I don't want him to draw these in. I don't want them, this thing to come. But
no, I know.
He came, got to them again.
Did he? Yep. We've got, so my chicken coop is it's a metal building. It's like a carport from the old Hickory buildings. And I had it enclosed all the way around in metal. And then because it's bolted to the metal frame at the bottom, I've got it wind anchored into the ground. And then I built a concrete, or a gravel pad for it to sit on. So I just bunch gravel up as much as I can. I've come out there and a raccoon, if I don't go out and look at least daily, and a raccoon starts digging, because it'll take him about 3 days of digging to get, 3 nights of digging to get under there. If I don't get that hole fast enough and he keeps digging, so I go out there and I put a bunch of red pepper in the hole, and then I cover it up with more gravel. You know, if he's only one day into it and hasn't breached the wall, that red pepper stops them, because they'll start digging in there again, and they get it in their nose or whatever, and they quit. Oh. But I've fended them off many a time, but if you're not diligent on it, and you're not out there every day, and you don't notice they've started digging,
yeah,
they'll get it. It takes them a few days, but that's why I use gravel instead of dirt, because, you know, they got a tunnel under to get in at night.
Yeah.
But I never see them in the daytime. I didn't even know it was a raccoon till I put them cameras up.
Yeah.
But they're vicious. They'll come in and pick your chickens off one at a time.
Of course they will, yeah. They'll get eggs, too. But what is this light that you talked about? It works?
It's just this little tiny thing. It's about the size of a matchbox, but thicker. And you can, it's got a little bolt hook on it. You can hook it up to a fence post or something. And it's got a solar panel on the top.
Uh-huh.
So it charges its own little battery.
Yeah.
And it's just a red LED blinking light. And it goes off at like a weird time interval. And if you set that out, anything that's hunting at night sees that. And it's just enough to make them feel uneasy. They're spooked.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they feel like they're being watched, or it's just something that...
the light
does. Yep. And they just don't come around. And those bobcats, I had those two juvenile bobcats for a week. And I mean, I watched them. I wouldn't have believed it was a mountain lion if you wouldn't have told. I said bobcat. I'm gonna go mountain lions. They're two juvenile mountain lions. And my guess is that, like, mom was done teaching them. They're on their own. They were still hanging out together because they, you know, they're young. But they hung out for about a week straight, and they were picking a chicken off every day. And I'd go out there in the morning drinking my coffee and was watching, waiting for them to come back. And I went and put that light up. And as soon as I did, never saw them again.
Well, I'm going to go down there and get me one.
They're hanging right at Edward Seeds. If you walk in, Marilyn's working there. They got them hanging right on the thing right there. And every time I'm in there, I comment with her. I'm like, those lights ran off that mountain lion.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any mountain lions. Well, I may have and don't know it. But I have lots of coyotes and bobcats.
Oh, yeah.
Bobcats are my worst predator.
Yeah. I've got... 3 or 4 different bobcat on camera that I've caught them, yeah. And that's just there at Bellwood. So if you're over here on Bellwood Road, I'm, you know, probably 3 miles as a crow flies to the north.
Yeah, I know the Bell, you know where Sugar Plant Road comes out,
sure.
On Bell Road. I mean on
Carthage.
Edmonds,
yeah.
North. Are you back toward town?
I'm farther east, so I'm
farther east?
I'm 1 mile, exactly 1 mile to the east from Big Springs Road.
Okay.
Mile marker 25 is in my front pasture. The property was deeded to the Kingwood Plantation that was over on Rome Pike years and years and years ago. I've done a lot of research on the land. But it was... So I consider myself Bellwood, even though our house is off the highway. People that talk about Bellwood, they consider a thing that you got to be on the other side of the highway. But I consider myself Bellwood. But it'd be right there. So,
yeah. So you're on the...
I'm east of Big Spring.
South side.
South side. And it was before you get to... the next road up would be Ben Green Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got two very, very special buddies that live on Sugar Flat Road. Mm-hmm. Just barely in off of 70.
Going north? That little segment before it dead ends at Rome Pike, or going south?
They're coming south.
Okay.
Off of 70.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I know the Jenkins out there that are right
James
there.
James and Sandy Proctor, they moved here, and well, he came from southern Mississippi, and she lived at Paducah, Kentucky, and they got, actually she was living in Nashville at the time, but she's from Paducah, and they got together and eventually married, and she sold her house and he sold his and in Mississippi, and they bought that a big house that had been started there on Sugar Flat Road, and they finished it themselves. They're the most talented people I ever know. They can do anything.
How are you friends with these folks? How did you know them?
I met them. I sell a little bit of firewood for people, mainly hickory for smoking meat.
You got a new customer. I need firewood all the time.
Do you?
I mentioned earlier that we made biscuits this morning. There's a cast iron cooking club. And it started with some fellers out of the First Methodist Church right there on Main. And the Pastor Ryan and two fellers, last name are Stout. They're not related. Dave Stout, who is, we call him the mayor of Bellwood because he owns the old general store in Bellwood and the feed store there, and he lives right there by that. So the mayor of Bellwood, Mr. Dave Stout, and then Richard Stout, who lives in town. And Richard used to do cast iron for another industry.
Yeah.
So he's got an electrolysis tank at his house. So we find old cast iron and restore it, and then sell it or give it away or do anything with it. But we do these outdoor cooking demonstrations all the time with cast iron. So like at Fiddler's Grove, I set up right behind the Forbes Cabin, which the Forbes Cabin was originally Shop Springs right over this way.
Yeah.
But anyway, I set up behind there, and when kids come through on their tour group things, I show them cooking over fire and cast iron.
Oh.
And but I'm always needing firewood because I cook in my house.
What do you hickory or what?
Anything I can get a hold of for the most part. Like the stuff I've been burning this year, I got a hold of. We did a festival over in Carthage. They did a market day festival thing, and they just brought a big dump load of wood out for us. And there's some hickory in it, I think. There's some oak that's the heavier stuff that's in there. There's some kind of like choke cherries, some kind of trash wood. It burns okay. But they dumped it off, and the guy came around at the end and said, "I'm not loading that back up, fellas. You're taking that with you."
Yeah.
So I got 8-foot bed on my truck. I got half a bed full of wood from burning that. So I've just been working on that this year. But I'm about out, so I'm gonna have to hook you up.
You mentioned Ryan. Are you talking about Bennett. The one with the name that I can't pronounce his last name?
No, it's Bennett. Ryan Bennett.
Okay, there's a,
he's the head pastor of the church there.
Yeah, I'm thinking one at Tucker's Crossroad. I know this people I'm telling you about. They're friends with him. They live close to him, I think. He pastors a church there.
Like Crossroads Church or whatever this thing?
Rides, Huntenberger or some kind of, I forget the last
There's two one. Churches in Bellwood. There's the old one that's over there. And then there's that little, the Crossroads Church was the newer one. That's like that metal building right there.
That's the one, I think.
Okay.
And this guy, he set up, they had a fundraiser thing last year. And you had to be good shape to participate, I think, you know.
Oh, the Iron Man thing or the Tough Mudder thing where they're running in
you
the...
You remember when they did that?
I saw it. So I was just talking to Mayor Bell, Rick Bell of Lebanon, yesterday at Fiddler's Grove. We had our annual meeting, and I asked him who organized that, and he had no idea. But I saw him setting it up.
That guy that runs that church.
It's a Tough Mudder is what they call those. It's where they do those obstacle courses in the mud and all that.
That's it.
I didn't know that was related to the church.
Yeah, it is. These properties I'm talking about, they're the one that they had, you remember them having a
Sugar Flat
cooking set up there?
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Barbecuing and all?
I do. I saw the truck that was there.
That was my buddy's.
Okay.
In fact, that was my hickory wood that they were burning.
Nice. I need to pick some up from you. I cook over fire at least once a week. I've got a goal in my life that I'm going to cook over fire as much as I can because I just love doing it just out of fun.
Yeah.
So I start a fire and I cook something over it at least once a week.
The 76, well, 1945, so that'd been 78 years ago. This August it would be 78 years ago. I cut my first wood to sell, for money.
Yeah.
I cut them with a chopping axe, two rigs. Mr. Frank and Annie Lee Fouch, my neighbors, asked me to cut them two rigs for their kitchen cook stove. There was no electricity down Bell Road back then. I was raised down here at Salisbury. I was born down here at Salisbury, rather. I was raised mostly up on this side of Salisbury, about 2 or 3 miles. and on a farm. And then I went off the Army and then I came back and went to Lebanon for 25 years and then bought a farm out here.
So when you first came back from, went to Korea, Army drafted, then did special work with the Air Force because they didn't have enough men. Then you come back and you end up at Fort Benning back with the Army again, and then you get released out. And then you come back home to Lebanon, and then you started you got the job there at Lux. Okay. When you came back home, though, did you come back home to stay with the folks, the family and everything? Did you have your own place by that time? So you're staying in Salisbury.
Yeah, I'm born down there in Salisbury.
Okay.
Right close to where the interstate is.
Okay. And then you got the job in Lebanon. Did you end up moving to Lebanon to be closer to work?
I moved down there as soon as I went to work there.
Okay.
And we rented for the first two or three or four years, well, till 60. In July of 60, we bought the house, our first house, on Fairview Avenue,
mm-hmm.
which is down close to Cold Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
The third house up from Cold Ferry when we first bought, but then the church on the corner, they bought the first house, tore it down. A few years later, they wanted more space, so they bought the second house and tore it down. And several more years. In 1979, they wanted to buy three or four houses here and build a big parking lot. So that's when they got mine, and because they built right up to a few feet of my house, actually, after they moved it. And I planted that tree, that big magnolia, and they left it. They put a little concrete thing around it.
Around the tree.
A little maple. Them two trees that's in their parking lot are my trees.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go look at them like some of them in town.
Yeah, you'll see the big, big, pretty magnolia, and then the little maple, right? It's a sugar maple right next to it, but it's small, you know, about that big. But we stayed there for 25 years, and then before they did that, and then we moved a little quicker than they were than we wanted to. I wanted to finish out my working career there at Lux before, but we came on up to the farm, and Andy Lou and I were married a few months before, on February the 12th, before I got out of the military. In May, and then she lived until April the 10th of 2010, which is 55 years and 2 months.
And you didn't mention it. What was your wife's name? Her first name?
Annie Lou.
And was she from here local also?
This is Annie Lou. Yeah.
Okay, in the picture here.
Yeah, she's from Auburntown over here. Mm-hmm. Actually, she was born near Ardmore, Alabama, okay. which is on the Alabama-Tennessee line, that her father went down there to work and met her mother, and they married and lived down there for 10 years, and that's when she was born, and she was almost 10 years old when they moved back up here where he was raised in Auburntown, and otherwise I never would have met her, see, and so that picture in the middle was made up here at my church. I belong to the Cumberland Presbyterian Church, and mm-hmm. we've been in it about 35 years. And that's when we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary there, that middle picture.
Mm-hmm.
That bottom picture is one of us, sketch thing that made from another picture mm-hmm. when we were pretty young. And
So after being in Auburn Town, is that's not DeKalb County? What is that over there?
That's Cannon County. Just barely, the edge of it is almost still in Wilson County.
Go
Wilson County this way till you get to the end of the county.
Mm-hmm.
We had actually, her daddy was born on Kennedy Creek Road, which is the last road over in Wilson County, and we bought that farm when it sold. 50 acres of where her daddy was born,
mm-hmm.
and we kept it until 2005. We never did use it for anything. Just we she just kind of wanted to, because it, you know, her grandmothers and her dad was born on it. And she wound up with Alzheimer's toward the end, and by the around 2000, especially 2008 or 10 somewhere, she got to where she didn't know who I was even. Mm. But I kept her at home and took care of her till.
Here, were you guys here in Watertown by that
point? I bought this 10 years ago.
Okay.
When it sold, we still lived out there at the
farm. On Bell Road. Yeah.
Yeah. And she, I bought it. It came. One of my nieces actually built it, and then her husband borrowed quite a bit of money on it and couldn't pay it back, didn't pay it. Mm. And the mortgage company sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept watching for it after they had moved out of it and everything, and I bought it. And then I just kind of fixed it up and furnished it, and thinking that I'll keep it and move here someday when I get old enough to need to leave the farm.
Yeah.
And I always tell everybody, about 2 years ago, I decided wasn't ever going to get old enough, so I just go ahead and move. And,
right, just do, go ahead and pitch it off and do it.
I've been up here 23 months now. And
I always loved Watertown. When we first moved here, I moved up from the Houston, Texas area. I was born in Illinois, across the river from St. Louis, Missouri, but then graduated high school in Colorado. My dad worked for the railroad, and that took us out there. And then I moved back and married the girl I'd been dating in high school. But at that time, because all the manufacturing had closed up, we had steel mills and paper mills and everything, they'd all closed up, and it was really hard to get a job. So, you know, here I am, 18, 19, 20 years old, and I'm working retail jobs and things like that, and you can't get it lending for a house because they weren't giving money to first-time home buyers because they were afraid they were going to foreclose. So we just couldn't get a go. So we moved to Houston because my dad had since moved there. My mom and dad lived there, and we'd visited a couple of times. And the whole time we were there, everybody's got houses and jobs and cars, and, you know, it's easy to get a living there. So we moved down there and started our family and the kids, our first son. And when he was 10, my wife, at that time we'd worked finance, but she ended up going to work for the treasurer here, Tennessee treasurer, Lillard, in Nashville. So he hired her and brought us up here. I was teaching at the time. And when we got here, just loved it, fell in love with it. And the reason we moved to Lebanon, why we chose Lebanon over everywhere else that we looked at, because we went to like all the way down to Columbia and over into like Cheatham County and up towards almost all the way to Clarksville, like looking at different properties and houses and everything. What brought us to Lebanon was the Music City Star, the train.
Yeah.
Because my wife's state job got her a free ticket every day. So she could drive into town 7 miles, park, and then sit on the train and, you know, work on stuff on the computer or read a book and not have to deal with traffic. She could just ride straight downtown, and then the little shuttle bus picked up the state employees and took them to the Capitol.
Yeah.
So that's why we chose Wilson County, was that train. And we found that land there in Bellwood and loved it. And it's got a little creek you got to drive through to get up to the house and everything. And that scared most people off because they saw that they didn't want to drive their cars through a creek or whatever, you know. Yeah. And I loved it. We thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
So we moved in and had our second son. We were told we couldn't have any more kids after the first one. So the kids are almost 10 years apart. And then we had our son, and he's lived here his whole life and goes to Tucker's Crossroads. And we just love it here. But, you know, I started volunteering at Fiddler's Grove within 6 months of moving here. A lady named Vicki Eads was running the Grove at the time. And I had volunteered for an agriculture day to teach kids about sheep and hogs and all kinds of stuff at the fairgrounds.
You know the Powell's then, I guess.
By name. I don't know that I know them personally. But anyway, Vicki was like, well, if you like, you know, volunteering and being up here, come hang out at Fiddler's Grove. And I never left. I've been there ever since.
Yeah.
And I've since retired. I was in finance myself for a while and had done some stuff with that and education and I kind of hang out at the house and do history stuff and learning and try to help people as much as I can with that out of Fiddler's Grove. But Any time you come across anything you think's good for local history or whatever, I'd be glad. And I'm going to have you come up and tell me more about the Deadman store, because that's one of the ones that I really do want people to know more about.
Yeah.
Just because of the stories I've heard about it. And I hadn't heard any of that about Roy and all that.
Rick Bale, you mentioned him a while ago.
Yeah. He's on the board, the Fiddler's Grove board with me.
Yeah.
And Cumberland. I know a lot. I do a lot with Cumberland.
And Mayor now.
Yeah.
Oh. You Bell Road, you
sure.
you know Bell Road.
Mm-hmm.
Rick's grandpa, Albert Bell, grandmother Pauline, were two of the main people on Bell Road for all their, till they died.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Albert, Rick's daddy, do you know him?
I don't.
Had you heard of him or anything?
Just through people talking about the Bell family and Lebanon.
He's the one that started Lee Alco and the factory down there, mm-hmm. make storm windows and doors.
Mm-hmm.
That's their son. That's Rick's daddy.
Oh, okay.
And he was Charles Albert was born and spent his early years up to the, married and left home, right down on Bell Road. If you know where the three-way stop is on Bell Road.
Mm-hmm. On this side or on the...
There's a cross, Tracy Road crosses
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yes it is, yep.
But back down toward the interstate from there, the first big house down at the foot of the hill, not that barn that's been turned into a house, but the next big house was where they was raised, where Charles Albert was raised, and his dad and mother owned it. They owned actually a lot of land there. They owned to the left and to the right. They owned, if you're going back toward Lebanon, they owned all the way out nearly to the next road, which is Poplar Hill Road.
Mm-hmm.
They owned nearly all the way.
Wow. Just as an older family going back to, like, is that a family that's been there for, since Tennessee charters were first set up and people could get, big, huge chunks of land and...
What the...
The Bell family?
That Bell family was not, I don't know which one they named it, but there was another Bell family lived on that road in the early 1900s. There are two little bridges on that road,
mm-hmm.
too narrow to pass a car on. One right below the Bell house there, and then another on down close to the other end where it's next to the interstate. Those two bridges were built by Bell Bridge Company. And it used to be all through Middle Tennessee, there was bridges that had sides on them that you couldn't pass a car on them either. They were too narrow to pass. And they were all kind of hump bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bell Bridge Company is one made all them too.
Okay.
Or put them up. And
I wonder if that one, so there's the one that Rome Pike used to run across it at Spring Creek. So when you're going out, if you're on Carthage Highway, 70 North, and you're leaving Lebanon, and you're heading out east, and you cross Spring Creek there, so Rome Pike comes in to what is now 70,
mm-hmm.
and it used to run that straighter route and then curve to go up and around the hill to then continue out to what we now call Old Rome Pike.
Yeah.
Once you got past like Thompson Hill and all that, where the old retirement house was, there's an old bridge you can still see from Highway 70.
A narrow
and it's a narrow one, and it's kind of got that hump to it.
Used to be one off of...
And there's one like that out in Statesville. And there's one still in Lebanon over the Town Creek that's right there by Maple. And I can't think what that little street is that crosses right there. It's not too far from that Cody Clip place.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a few of them still around.
The original Bales
built those.
Lived on that road. One of them lived down there in the same house that Charles Albert was raised in. And the other one lived just across the little creek, and up there on the right, there's an old house sitting there now. And one of they were brothers. And the old man that lived up here at the corner where the three-way stop is, the house is not there now. When I was 8 years old, we moved into that community, and he told me all about all the people that ever lived around there and and the original bell. And later, my wife was kin to one of the secretaries that worked for that Bell Bridge Company. Mm-hmm. And she lived in Jacksonville, Florida at the time that I met her. And she'd come up here every so often. She had a sister in Nashville, and she'd always call Andy Louvre and want us to meet them down there and spend the day with them. And we would. And she died. Hazel died in 1980. I still got, she gave Andy Lou a lot of her stuff when she died, and still got some of I passed some of it along to other folks that are kin, that would, like Andy Lou's nieces and nephews and things, mm-hmm. to try to keep it in the family. I try to do that with everything that I've had from long ago, pass it on to somebody before I die. And
Did you and Annie Lou have children?
We didn't have any.
No children?
No.
Yep.
We had at least a dozen that was pretty close to a child. One little girl, it was daughter of the people that started the Texas Boot Company. Mm-hmm. And Annie Lou didn't, after, when we married, I said, I'm from the old school. I'll try to make the living, and you stay home and raise the kids, mm-hmm. and keep house and give me plenty of food to eat.
And pat your belly there, yeah. You're talking to a guy who's well over.
If you can't, then meals. If I can't make the living, then you might have to get out and get a job. Then, but we'll try it this way. And so, after 55 years and 2 months, I was still trying to take care of it.
Yeah.
And, so she was always home, and all these other little kids that come visit, and we'd get to know them, and they'd all love her. She was good with children. And they'd all start fussing at their parents wanting to go stay with Annie Lou instead of daycare. And this one lady lives at close to the I-65, way over down past Murfreesboro on over.
Going towards like Columbia and Bell Buckle down around?
Yeah, not that hardly that far, no. Mm. But anyhow, she was about this big. She was child of the people that, the man that started Texas Boot.
Mm.
Not the owner, but one that, General Foreman over it.
Mm.
And the rest of them went to work at Lux Clock. And we wound up knowing him, and this little girl they had, about 4 years old, maybe five, she wore thick glasses in her early days, and finally Elwood asked Anna Lou, said, can Sherry come and stay with you? Said, she fusses all the time about wants to come see you instead of going to daycare. And they said, bring her on. And, so she lived with us during the work time,
sure.
every day, till she got old enough to stay by herself, like 14, 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's still living, and she's my buddy, and then her and her husband live way over yonder. I can't tell you the name of that
town. Over towards Interstate 65. So, well, she's still here in the area, though. He's still got her.
So yeah. She's been getting in bad health, though.
Oh.
I guess you saw the ramp out there, and she, that last time I came, she was having a little bit of trouble getting in, even up that step there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the proctors, every time they think I need something, they drove up here in the truck one day and had that ramp, all that stuff in the back of the truck, backed in the yard there. And
put it up right there?
Said, hey, we put this up. And that man over there, but my buddy and neighbor across the road, he comes over here after a little bit, and he looked kind of sad. He said, are you about to get in a wheelchair? I said, no. I've got elderly kinfolks and friends, and we put this in so they can get in to visit me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's a good idea, and turned around and went back home.
He saw that, thought something had happened and was coming up with you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, when I first pulled up, because anytime I'm coming into Watertown on this side, if I'm coming, I was in town whenever I'd called you earlier. Usually, if I'm coming to Watertown, I'm going to come over, I'll cross the highway, Linwood Road, and usually I'll turn off and take Poplar Hill in.
Yeah.
And then drop in over here off that side, come right into the square.
Yeah.
And then, but if I'm in Lebanon and I'm heading over to Watertown, I'll come out 70 and the Sparta Pike and then come off on Main Street. So I was coming up this way, and I knew about 300 block was going to be on this side of the high school. I just didn't know about where. So I'd gone by the first time and I saw the ramp. So when I came back around, I'd seen it, and you had mentioned on the phone that you're 90 and getting on older. And I saw that, and I was like, well, maybe that's his house. And I sort of right. pulled up. And then you meet me at the door, and I was like, well, that ramp ain't for him.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I enjoy them. My neighbors are good to me. And I got two moved in here, and I became buddies. But anyway, I did have a souvenir from the first Cracker Barrel store.
Sure.
And
I've talked to some of the Evans family and things about the Cracker Barrel store, and I knew a feller, I still know him, Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah.
He worked for him as a finance type guy.
Yeah.
For a long time, and I met Ray Fox through him, a bunch of people with Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
But you say you got some kind of souvenir from them.
I still got one. I can't remember where it's at now, but I had one. It's actually a plastic thing of a picture of the store.
Yeah, the one over on 109.
The Evans, he was from Smithville here.
Mm-hmm.
He married a girl here at Commerce.
Oh, okay.
And Dick Macon's daughter. Richard Macon, the auctioneer that died about a year ago?
By name, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, his sister.
Oh, okay.
And she's still living in Lebanon, and they did break up after that, but he was married to her, and I was supplying them with their firewood, too. But
oh, for the store at Cracker Barrel there? Yeah, for one and
all? No, at her home where they
lived. Oh, okay.
His purchasing agent did contact me. I'm sure he told him to.
Mm.
And ask, would I be interested in talking to them about supplying all the Cracker Barrel stores?
Right.
I said, quickly, thanks, but no thanks. Right. But I started to tell you a while ago, I started cutting firewood, and I've cut a little bit all the time. Of course, I have a factory job and other things going on. I didn't work full time at it, but I've always cut firewood for people. My first one was 12 years old, and $2 a rick. So, but then I had that hanging up there,
mm-hmm.
and these people moved in, and they said, we got married in them. They both had been married before and had grown children, and broke up for some reason or whatever. And they got married and said, we got married at a Cracker Barrel store in California. I said, okay, now I know what to do with that souvenir.
Uh-huh.
So I presented it to them.
Nice.
And they lived across the street on the other side of the church in that first house. They play music and sing, and pretty good too. And so now they got a souvenir from the first Cracker Barrel store, the very first one. And, you know, they're nationwide now, but Danny Evans he was selling gasoline, and he wanted to figure out ways of, put a eating place next to the gas station and sell more gas.
And
turned out it worked the other way.
Uh-huh. It got better at the other than the gas. I think this thing's about to end here. I'm going to shut this one down. Let me stop this one.